All your favorite CBC podcasts are now available on YouTube. The best in award-winning true crime investigations, hilarious comedies, vibrant pop culture conversations, and even more audio series are all available on CBC Podcast's YouTube channel. You'll also find exclusive video first episodes, YouTube shorts, and behind-the-scenes content from our hosts and producers that you can't find anywhere else. So if YouTube is your go-to source for podcasts, just search CBC Podcasts and hit subscribe, and you'll never miss the latest update.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Q. So, you might know Michael Keaton as the star of like iconic films like Batman or Beetlejuice or Birdman, other movies with B in the title. I mean, so many more. But for his new film, he's trying something different. It's called Knox Goes Away, and it's the story of a contract killer, like a hitman, who was diagnosed with a rare brain disease that leads to early dementia. At the same time, his family gets in some trouble, so he had to do his job of contract killing, all while negotiating the oncoming symptoms of severe dementia. It's a pretty harrowing, pretty complicated film, one that you can tell Michael spent a lot of time thinking about. So Michael Keaton got on the line to talk a little bit about what interested him in the film. How to balance making a sad, thoughtful piece about watching your mind start to fade, while also trying to make an action thriller movie. He also spent some time talking about his early days working as a crew member on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. It was fun to spend some time in the neighborhood with Michael Keaton. Here's our conversation. Michael, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
I really love the film. Congratulations on it.
Thanks. I'm glad to hear that. And thanks for letting me just even talk about it.
You know, it's an interesting film because it's about a hitman suffering from a form of dementia. And I was really struck by how honest the way you showed the disease in this film. You know, there's smaller moments like forgetting words and cups of coffee to bigger moments about like how to protect your family from something you know is coming your way. Now, I know you didn't write the film. The film's by Gregory Poirier. But were there people you knew in your own life that you thought about when you were getting ready to make this film?
No, there are probably always people you think about, or I think about, or references, or, you know, I saw someone do something once, or I remember hearing this, you know, person on the radio once, or I saw this thing happen. So that's all in all of our experiences, but I guess actors. But in this as far as this particular situation, someone suffering from this version of dementia, which is called Creutzfeldt-Jakob dementia. There's no one that I know who's afflicted with that specifically.
Without spoiling too much here, and I don't want to give away sort of what that big challenge that your character goes up against is, because I want people to find out for themselves. One thing that does happen is that, you know, this character has to deal with a lot. He's starting to go away. Like, you start to see him sort of realize that he's losing something. But you also, like, he's a former soldier, and he doesn't necessarily seem to take a whole lot of delight in the work that he's doing. And you begin to wonder, as a contract killer, has he already sort of lost his life to this role?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Good point. Yeah. That's one I hadn't thought of. That's correct. Wow. That's right. In a way, you know, he compartmentalizes so much that he kind of already did go away. You know, that's great. Jeez. I wish I would have thought of that. That's very interesting.
Well,
you're right.
I'm very affordable, you know.
Yeah. this guy does depart. And, you know, the only way he can do what he does is to, you know, be kind of a remarkable, you know, have real skills about compartmentalizing. How he got there was never described in the script. So as an actor, you always kind of create a backstory for your guy that you're playing. And this time I had to create a backstory for not only me, but for the story, you know, and I kind of worked that out. And Pacino and I had kind of discussions about what that might be, you know.
Talk to me a little bit about how Al Pacino ends up in this thing. Like, when you sign up to be a director, is he just first on your call list and you can give him a shout?
Interestingly, not. I mean, it's not like he was second or third or fourth. It wasn't that. I wasn't like I read it and went, oh, this is Al Pacino.
Yeah.
I didn't see anyone particularly. First of all, I kind of ruminated on all the roles, and the producers were getting very nervous about just about all of them. But I, you know, I would think about it and I'd maybe go look at something that I hadn't seen and I had thoughts and then I'd narrow it down and I go, you know what? Okay, I think her. So then I'd pull the trigger and then you have to hope the person is available, you know, and or even wants to do it. And fortunately, in Al's case, he was and he did. And we had a long conversation about it.
Did you learn something? I mean, you've been acting for a really long time. Did you learn something by being up close to Pacino making this film?
Oh, yeah. I mean, with all the actors, there was no read throughs. There was no, none of them had the advantage. And I think a lot of them liked it this way, actually, of like a big read through and rehearsals or anything like that. That there was no, we had never had any of that luxury. We shot it in 24 and a half or 25 days or whatever. And so no time, not a ton of money. You know how these things work. And with Al, I had known him socially a little bit here and there. And when I finally wanted to talk to him, all it was I said, hey, you're going to get a script, or someone sent him a script. You knew it was for me. He was extremely complimentary and has been after making this movie to people that I'm hearing. You know, people tell me what he's saying about it. It's really awfully nice. But we both had kind of a mutual, or you know, mutual admiration society thing going on, obviously with him and for me. And we talked about it on the phone, and then we got on the phone and we started going into a little more detail about things and what he was thinking, what I thought, you know. And we stayed on the phone for a long, long time, a lot longer than I was prepared for. And then we just kind of talked generally about things besides the character. And it was the single best conversation about acting I've ever had. And I was so glad that he was in once I had that conversation with him.
Hold on. You said it was the greatest conversation about acting I've ever had. Can you give me an example of something he said, if it's not betraying a confidence?
Well, no, I can't, because I can't remember anything specific except that it was, I've said this before and it's the truth. I bore myself to tears when I hear myself have to discuss acting. I don't really care to talk about it or hear it, but I really like to hear it from others. You know, I'm curious about it. And so it just started, we were talking about the film and his role, his character specifically. And then we just started speaking generally about things. And then he was going on and he started talking more and I was talking more and we were sharing things. And it was so easy and not at all esoteric and not, very cerebral, really, you know, just this great discussion about things. And it ended up being a really long conversation. And I don't even like talking on the phone, but this went on and on for honestly, maybe, oh, I don't know, 45 minutes or something, you know, which for me is a long time.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. More of my conversation with Michael Keaton coming up.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Let me just reintroduce you here. I'm speaking with actor and director Michael Keaton. His latest film, Knox Goes Away, hits theaters across the U.S. today. It's out in Canada later this year. So before your time as an actor, you worked, and this is exciting, as someone on public radio. You worked in public television, yes. WQED in Pittsburgh. And that's where Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was filmed. And as a kid...
Yeah, when I worked there, I was a member of the crew. You know, so when you're on the crew, the production crew, you can do anything. And sometimes you do just manual labor. And you do everything from that to floor managing shows to actually lighting, you know, working on lighting crews. You did that a lot. And then you work on the local shows. And Fred's show was in Pittsburgh at WQED at the time.
What do you remember doing? What do you remember about Mr. Rogers?
But he was just a very nice man. And I thought, I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop, thinking, well, this can't be real. And it turns out it is real. He had a wonderful sense of humor. You know, we were pretty wild guys on his crew, and he just appreciated us all. And, you know, there was none of that. Well, you know, I'm a man of the cloth a little bit. Not, he wasn't really, but he kind of was. And, you know, I want you boys to behave. He just thought we were funny, and he had a really good sense of humor. He was just the real deal.
You're growing up to be a fine person. That's what I like to think about you. You're growing up to be a person who can talk about your feelings, not just wipe things out like Lady Elaine.
What I've heard you talk about is, even though Mr. Rogers was sort of this straight-laced, clean-cut guy, and like you mentioned, a man of the cloth, the people working around him on the show were like kind of hippies.
We all were. Yeah, we were wild. I mean, if you ever see pictures of this crew, we were, you know, way ahead of our time. You know, gay members and women members, and everybody had long hair and beards and group, you know, everything. And we were, that's where it started. But then I got out of there and knew I wanted to start. I was doing a play and working at the station at the same time, and that was really fun. And then I really was starting to write. And then eventually I made my move. I was going to go to New York, but I came to LA, and here I am now. You know, the directing thing is something I always wanted to do. And I directed little shorts, and this is my third, really. The first directing thing was a little thing on the David Letterman Film Festival. But this was, you know, this was a big step up, and I'm proud of this movie, and it's getting really good response.
Well, to talk to me a little bit about directing. I mean, you had a couple of hard choices to make here, you know, because this is an action movie as well as this sort of exploration of dementia and loss. So as the director, how much of that was on your mind? Like, what choices did you have to make it so that it was a quiet film about a very scary thing a human can go through, but also like a big crime thriller?
Yeah, it's a tricky movie to make because it's got a lot of levels, and you're trying to accomplish a lot here in whatever it is, however many minutes it is, 110 minutes or whatever. I don't know how long. I forget what we came in at. But you've seen it, so you know how much there is to it. Because I guess I don't really think about it. People keep talking about it being noir, which I guess it is, but I didn't set out to see if I could make a specifically noir movie. I just told the story. I just wanted to tell the story, and I wanted to tell it how I saw it. And so, you know, you have the ticking clock aspect, you have the connection with the sun. It's a redemption story. And it's in a weird way. So it has nothing. It's not a hitman movie. And I know it's been described as, you know, he plays a hitman, and once you see it, you realize, well, this isn't a hitman movie at all. In fact, early on, I removed some things from the opening of the movie that described everything and kind of set it up as such. And I said, I want the audience to go to wonder when I'm in the scene, for instance, with the great Ray McKinnon. And I was in Dope Sick with him, and I was a fan, and I knew I'd want to do something with that guy again. But when I wanted the audience to feel like they didn't even know what these guys were talking about. What did they do? You know, did they repair, you know, washing machines? Did they, you know, what did they do? And then boom, you realize what they do. And then once we get through that, now the story really takes off. So there was a lot to accomplish and a lot to pull off, especially in a limited amount of time.
So you sort of had dreams of being a director for a long time, as you mentioned. You know, when you left Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, when I started out, I was even writing. You know, I was writing. I was way into comedy, and I was doing a play, and I wanted to be on a certain side of the camera, and I probably should have pulled the trigger on that. But at the time, people just, you know, agencies would lose money on me doing that. They would say, "Well, you're not going to make any money. No one knows you as a director. You make a lot of money for us as an actor." So they weren't really very supportive, you know, but that would have been up to me to say, I don't care. I'm going to go find one on my own, or I'm going to write one with friends and we'll go raise the money ourselves or something. But I didn't, because I was often either living my life the way I want to live my life or working, making a movie as an actor.
When you worked with directors like Tim Burton, do you take anything from the way they work and when it comes time to do your own work?
Well, he's special. He's in his own category. So of course you do. And what mostly you come away with is envy, you know, that you go, holy moly, just to say, this is what I'm going to make. this is how my imagination works, and I'm going to film it at such a high level and take all the risks and make them look stunning. But you can't compare his sets or him to anyone else I've ever worked with.
Give me an example of something. Like, I'm not in filmmaking. Give me an example of something that he would do that you don't really see anywhere else.
Well, just look at his movies. He's unique. You can't say that about almost anyone.
But do you feel that on set too?
Absolutely, all the time. Yeah. So you learn something from everybody, you know. And if you're paying attention, if you have a pulse, you know, and if you're awake, you just through osmosis. Actually, I've worked with Tarantino. I've worked with Soderbergh. Soderbergh makes you feel like you're not even being directed. You're just kind of having a conversation. Next thing you know, and so I'm very proud of Knox Goes Away because people really were extremely complimentary afterwards, just in the having talked about the experience, you know, how much fun they had, how much they enjoyed working. And so that made me feel really good.
The last thing I wanted to ask you about was, it was nice to see you at the Oscars the other night. I mean, even though you weren't in any of this year's movies, you had two big reunions. You and Catherine O'Hara presented for Best Production Design and Best Makeup. And then there was the great Batman gag with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito calling you out for being Batman.
Well, Arnold and I are presenting tonight together for a very obvious reason.
We both tried to kill Batman.
Yeah. Well, we both tried. I as the Penguin in Batman Returns.
And that was Mr. Freeze in Batman and Robin.
How did Batman beat you?
Oh, he used my one weakness against me.
Heat?
Love.
Oh. He threw me out a window.
So what did it feel like to have that happen at this stage of your career?
That's fun. It's great fun. You know, the whole thing, the gag about sitting in the audience was not originally there. You know, after, you know, you show up to rehearse, you know, because they need to know for camera and for lighting and for the pace of the show and for direction. You show up to rehearse, you know, you run through it a couple times a day before or a couple days before. And I went and rehearsed with Catherine, and Catherine's a friend of mine. So one reason I wanted to present was because it was going to be she and I together. And then after rehearsal, I was on my way home and I got a text from Jimmy or Molly, his wife who produces, saying, hey, there's this idea. And I actually don't know to this day where the idea came from, if it was Molly's or if Danny. I'd run into him when we talked and he might have had a funny idea after I left. But they said, you know, here's this idea. And then, you know, see if it's going to work or not. I love that high wire act, you know, because a lot of those things can just fall flat. But it was really fun. I've never seen it. I mean, I was in it, but I haven't seen any of the replays of it or anything. But worked really well, I thought.
Thanks for the time.
Well, thanks very much.
It's my conversation with actor and director Michael Keaton. His latest film, Knox Goes Away, hits theaters across the U.S. today. And that's it for us today. The other conversation we have up today is about one of the strangest movies and funniest movies to come out of Canada in a really long time. It's called Hey Victor. It's by this guy named Cody Lightning, who starred in the groundbreaking film from 1998 called Smoke Signals. He played, like, in a couple of very small flashback scenes, young Victor, like the young main character in the film. And the new film is all about, like, what would have happened if that's all he traded on for his entire life and was like desperately trying to get the cast of Smoke Signals back together for a reunion, for a sequel, to try and save his life. It's a very funny movie. He's here to talk about it. Go check that out. We'll see you soon. Later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.